Marjorie Daw. I. Dr. Dillon to Edward Delaney, Esquire, at the Pines, near Rye, New Hampshire. August 8, 1872. My dear sir, I am happy to assure you that your anxiety is without reason. Fleming will be confined to the sofa for 3 or 4 weeks, and will have to be careful at first how he uses his leg. A fracture of this kind is always a tedious affair. Fortunately, the bone was very skillfully set by the surgeon who chanced to be in the drugstore where Fleming was brought after his fall, and I apprehend no permanent inconvenience from the accident. Fleming is doing perfectly well physically, but I must confess that the irritable and morbid state of mind into which he has fallen causes me a great deal of uneasiness. He is the last man in the world who ought to break his leg. You know how impetuous our friend is ordinarily, what a soul of restlessness and energy, never content unless he is rushing at some object, like a sportive bull at a red shawl, but amiable withal. He is no longer amiable. His temper has become something frightful. Miss Fanny Fleming came up from Newport, where the family are staying for the summer, to nurse him, but he packed her off the next morning in tears. He has a complete set of Balzac's works, 27 volumes, piled up near his sofa, to throw at Watkins whenever that exemplary serving man appears with his meals. Yesterday I very innocently brought Fleming a small basket of lemons. You know it was a strip of lemon peel on the curbstone that caused our friend's mischance. Well, he no sooner set his eyes upon those lemons than he fell into such a rage as I cannot adequately describe. This is only one of moods, and the least distressing. At other times he sits with bowed head regarding his splintered limb, silent, sullen, despairing. When this fit is on him, and it sometimes lasts all day, nothing can distract his melancholy. He refuses to eat, does not even read the newspapers, books, except as projectiles for Watkins, have no charms for him. His state is truly pitiable. Now, if he were a poor man, with a family depending on his daily labor, this irritability and despondency would be natural enough. But in a young fellow of 24, with plenty of money and seemingly not a care in the world, the thing is monstrous. If he continues to give way to his vagaries in this manner, he will end by bringing on an inflammation of the fibula. It was the fibula he broke. I am at my wit's end to know what to prescribe for him. I have anesthetics and lotions, to make people sleep and to soothe pain, but I've no medicine that will make a man have a little common sense. That is beyond my skill, but maybe it is not beyond yours. You are Fleming's intimate friend, his fidus Achates. Write to him frequently, distract his mind, cheer him up, and prevent him from becoming a confirmed case of melancholia. Perhaps he has some important plans disarranged by his present confinement. If he is, you will know, and will know how to advise him judiciously. I trust your father finds the change beneficial? I am, my dear sir, with great respect, etc. 2. Edward Delaney to John Fleming, West 38th Street, New York. August 9, 1872. My dear Jack, I had a line from Dillon this morning, and was rejoiced to learn that your hurt is not so bad as reported. Like a certain personage, you are not so black and blue as you are painted. Dillon will put you on your pins again in 2 to 3 weeks, if you will only have patience and follow his counsels. Did you get my note of last Wednesday? I was greatly troubled when I heard of the accident. I can imagine how tranquil and saintly you are with your leg in a trough. It is deuced awkward, to be sure, just as we had promised ourselves a glorious month together at the seaside, but we must make the best of it. It is unfortunate, too, that my father's health renders it impossible for me to leave him. I think he is much improved, the sea air is his native element, but he still needs my arm to lean upon in his walks, and requires someone more careful than a servant to look after him. I cannot come to you, dear Jack, but I have hours of unemployed time on hand, and I will write you a whole post office full of letters, if that will divert you. Heaven knows, I haven't anything to write about. It isn't as if we were living at one of the beach houses, then I could do you some character studies, and fill your imagination with groups of sea goddesses, with their, or somebody else's, raven and blonde manes hanging down their shoulders. You should have Aphrodite in morning wrapper, in evening costume, and in her prettiest bathing suit. But we are far from all that here. We have rooms in a farmhouse, on a crossroad, 2 miles from the hotels, and lead the quietest of lives. I wish I were a novelist. This old house, with its sanded floors and high wainscots, and its narrow windows looking out upon a cluster of pines that turn themselves into Aeolian harps every time the wind blows, would be the place in which to write a summer romance. It should be a story with the odors of the forest and the breath of the sea in it. It should be a novel like one of that Russian fellow's, what's his name? Turgenev, nobody knows how to spell him. Yet I wonder if even Eliza Orr and Alexandra Paulovna could stir the heart of a man who has constant twinges in his leg. I wonder if one of our own Yankee girls of the best type, haughty and spirituel, would be of any comfort to you in your present deplorable condition. If I thought so, I would hasten down to the surf house and catch one for you, or, better still, I would find you one over the way. Picture to yourself a large white house just across the road, nearly opposite our cottage. It is not a house, but a mansion, built, perhaps, in the colonial period, with rambling extensions, and gambrel roof, and a wide piazza on three sides, a self-possessed, high-bred piece of architecture, with its nose in the air. It stands back from the road, and has an obsequious